Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to another episode of the VF1 podcast. I'm your host, Vincenzo Lindio, and on the other side of the line, as always, is my co-hostess with the mostest, Vanessa. This is being recorded post Bahrain race, our first race of the season. So we will have some thoughts on that. V, how you doing? Did you watch the race? I know you did, kind of, maybe. Maybe you slept through some of it, whatever happened. But yeah, what do you think? How you doing? How you feeling after it? What's going on?
This was, I think, a race where you're either going to have extremely high viewership because people are curious about what's going on in the mid to the backfield, or you're going to have a season with exceptionally low interest because we know it's going to happen because you now have a car that is 22, 26 seconds faster than his teammate, let alone the rest of the field. He's lapping at least a quarter of the rest of the field. Of course, we're talking about Max Verstappen, and this is no fault of Red Bull, but it's the same shit, different race. And I don't really know where that puts the sport right now. But it was an interesting race, and not for the good reasons. We'll talk about that a little later, but I don't know. How do you feel about the race? What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, obviously as a Ferrari fan, I don't know if I loved it, but I don't know how you go into that and look at it and say that was a great experience, like anybody in general, right? Like, how do you look at that and think that what you just saw was an experience that you want to relive 23 more times this season? And I think that's where we're at, right? Like, truly, we're at a point where, and listen, this is, I've been having to defend comments that I've made all over, you know, on X and stuff, because people don't understand what I'm saying when I say that F1 has this. I guess we can go into this a little bit later, but I'll just leave it with this before we do a quick rundown of the show. We've been saying this, this is the second season now, there's a crossroads happening, and at some point things will change. We'll go into that a little bit later. We definitely want to talk about the you know, what's happening within F1 and the kind of the battle they have to fight now, and that what they're up against. But also, we're going to talk about Christian Horner, and we're probably not going to go the direction you all think we're going to go in with that. But I think it would be responsible of us to at least discuss it and talk about probably the biggest story so far before the season started, right? Like, that's one of the biggest stories aside from Lewis going to Ferrari. Like, this is probably the biggest thing, you know, happening. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, you know, F1's crossroads and what they need to do. I want to start with, you know, your perspective. You've got a very, I would say positive, or neutral perspective, factual, something that cooler heads prevail type perspective, if I had to give it a name, about the Horner situation. And we talked a little bit about it pre-show, but for the audience, you know, let's talk a little bit about what's going on, and let's understand what's at risk here. You know, there's a lot more at risk than what people want to give credit for, or that people want to understand, right? Yeah. There's a lot of folks that just think that it's, oh, well, it's an F1 team. It's, you know, it's not real, right? It's this just a bunch of rich people running around and doing whatever they do, getting paid millions of dollars. They're on the TV. Like, that's the only people that are getting affected by this. But you have a different perspective. So I'm going to let you go dive into that. And it's, I think this is one of the, you know, more reasonable takes if you log on to X or any social media. General, it's, you get a very different perspective. So yours is one that, right, I think people need to understand.
I think the bigger issue people have to understand here is that we're in an era where news spreads faster than it can be verified, where news spreads faster than we can really have time to sit down and think about what is actually going on, who this affects, how this affects all the different people involved. And that's just where we're at right now. And I think we're also at a time, and I can say this because I'm an actual journalist. I went to journalism school. Although my degree is in government, I switched majors. But I also have 13 years, I would say going on 15, technically, if you add this podcast in the last couple of years with Formula One, of actual journalism experience. I was an editor-in-chief of a football blog in the United States. I wrote a book on football for women that I'm actually going to be revisiting and redoing soon, very soon. But I have a lot of experience in journalism. And in this era now where you don't have to have a journalism degree, you don't have to have a journalism background to become a journalist, you just have to have a strong social media presence. You have to be entertaining. But with that entertaining, you have to be trustworthy. You have to sell people on the idea that they can trust what it is that you're saying. And not just that, if you want to get picked up by a network, as so many people do, they're vying for tests right now, Formula One, because they understand how this works with 24 races, requires a lot of personnel to be able to run all of the events happening. And so people look at that as an opportunity to get a test with Formula One, with Sky Sports, because they need people on the ground to cover the content, right? So they're posting all of this content, hoping that somebody at FOM or Sky Sports or ESPN or anyone is going to actually see them and like them and want to give them a test, a trial run. And that's the end game here. But if you lack the necessary discretion to say, all right, we've got this issue happening, I need to be pragmatic about what I'm reporting. I have to take my emotion out of it, because at the end of the day, this is journalism. This is basic journalism 101. If you have an opinion about something, you are no longer a journalist, okay? You're a commentator. And there's a big difference, a huge difference. And as a journalist, you have to be able to demonstrate your ability to report on the facts, the who, what, where, when, why, and how. That should be your objective in reporting. And I'm not saying everyone's in this to try and become a reporter, but you should have the ability to be able to actually present those facts and allow people to form their own opinion. You should not be there to try and shape people's opinions based on your personal bias. Once you get into that area, you're already out of the running for a lot of things that you potentially think that you are putting yourself out there for. And why are you creating content? Why are you spending hours of your life every single day creating content for free for a sport to get noticed if they're going to look at you and say, this person is potentially a legal nightmare, right? And so I think with the Horner thing, I'm looking on social media and I'm seeing the things that people are posting. And one of the biggest trends that's emerging right now are content creators posting that somebody within the paddock texted me this, and they're posting the screenshots and just a lot of hearsay, but a lot of, oh yeah, Horner's toast. Oh yeah, all this, all that. Well, okay. Yeah. Okay. People can text their friends what they want to, but what's the end game here? What do you have, person in the paddock who has signed an NDA, what do you get from telling a content creator things that could get you fired? And as we know, if you're subpoenaed in any country and they say, we want your records, is say somebody sues you for defamation, for slander, libel, somebody sues you. And they subpoena you and you have to give them records. The people who gave you the clues, the hits, the tips, those people are potentially going to get fired just because they decided to tell you a little trackside chisme, you know, which is gossip in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Is that worth it? Is it really worth risking your reputation over helping somebody out who is basically going to get maybe a couple thousand likes? So yep. I think that's a bigger issue that we have to take into consideration, especially when we're on social media and we're reposting these things and we're liking these things and we're looking for a confirmation bias. We have to pay attention to that, because just as this person who allegedly leaked several documents, hundreds of documents, I guess, to over 150 some odd F1 personnel, team principals, journalists, all the top people in F1, just as those were released, your text messages could potentially be released too. Mm-hmm. You could potentially be opening yourself up to a massive legal shitstorm that you do not have the same protections that actual journalists have under a network. You're on your own with that. And so I think that's the bigger issue here. Whether these alleged WhatsApps and emails or whatever it is turn out to be real or not, you have to understand also that Jerry Halliwell has probably already seen all of this stuff. Jerry Halliwell is defending her man. That is up to her. That is between their family. Okay. You can have your opinions all you want to. You can say, oh, girl power isn't defending your cheating husband. Okay. Well, neither is destroying your family. And as far as Jerry Halliwell is concerned, based off what all this looks like, that she's more concerned about keeping her family together. She understands what this world is. She understands a hell of a lot better than you, me, or anyone else what this world is. So just let the woman have her peace. Leave her alone. She's dealing with enough shit. She doesn't need to hear it on social media either, right? You know, and also, when you think about everything that people are saying right now, of these are real people involved. Yes, they are, but you can't just pick and choose who you want to protect and who you want to go after. They have children. This is much greater. And I think that when you actually look at all the players involved, and I'm not going to go into, you know, the rumor, the gossip, whatever, because again, I'm not going to set myself up or this podcast up for a lawsuit. But I think we all have to show better discretion when we're talking about this stuff. Because, I mean, you've got content creators saying that, oh, Horner got out of the stuff because he has money to get the best lawyers. Well, just as he has the money to have the best lawyers, those lawyers could come after you too. So I guess and I'll just kind of wrap this up here by saying, if we are all in the interest of content creation and sharing our thoughts and things like that, we also have to be in the interest of understanding how to best protect ourselves. So that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, no, and again, this has nothing to do with, I'm not trying to comment specifically on anything here. I watched a journalist I've met before. I've sat in media rooms with her, and she does a lot of NASCAR, but she does, you know, Formula One, Jenna Fryer. She was, I believe, one of the first ones to tweet about the drive, the Google Drive that got leaked out. And, you know, she didn't say that it was evidence or anything like that. She simply said something like, you know, what'd she say? She put it in quotes, like, there's a drive that went around somebody sent a link around with alleged evidence. And, you know, people kind of jumped on her back about it and whatnot. And what struck me as interesting is, as I looked in, you know, deeper into how it happened, like, I know you've been media pens before, but for those that have not been in a media pen before, it's literally, it could be, depending on how big the event is, the series is, whatever. I've been in NASCAR pens where, you know, you've got 40, 50 different journalists just sitting next to each other. And journalists are next to bloggers and next to media people and whatnot, right? Yeah. And they're all sitting next to each other. And so when in a situation like this, I could just imagine they all received this link, right? And then who's going to be the first to put it out there? Is anyone going to put it out there? Now, I would say this. I think most of the journalists did a good, and I'm saying based on what I saw. So I don't know who has said anything or put anything out there. But I think most of the journalists did a good job not being, and again, we don't know. We have no idea the accuracy of any of this stuff. And quite frankly, it shouldn't matter. What I find interesting is that there are people that are damning some of these journalists for not putting the information out there, saying it's your responsibility. This type of stuff should be public. And this is, blah, blah, blah. So I've actually got two things to comment on this regard. One on the journalists. First of all, the journalists were also being, a lot of the journalists, I think all of the journalists were being threatened with lawsuits if they leaked anything out.
Yeah.
To your point,
oh, for sure.
There's libel and slander cases that can be put out. And even if there's truth, right? And actually, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe even if there is truth in whatever it is they say, without it being 100% certified, or not certified, but like 100% confirmed, they can verify. That's the word I'm looking for. You can still face mm-hmm. libel and slander, or one of those. I don't know which one it is, so I'm not a lawyer, right? But so there's still, even if something is accurate, you still face that type of defamation or whatever. So kudos to the good journalists that did not go, sending it out there. Now, did a lot of the journalists say we've received something? Yes, they did, but that's accurate. That was 100% accurate. We received something, period. The other side of the coin that I found very interesting is a lot of folks, again, with very little knowledge of how any of this works, how seemingly not even just in the F1 world or in the motorsport world, but there's folks that just have no understanding of how, like, just business in general, right? Like how things work in a business, which F1 is, because a lot of people are kind of, Red Bull, they're not going to, even if he did do something, they're not going to tell us. They're not going to let us know. Well, I don't know if anyone's ever been in an HR meeting before with HR, but those investigations in a company are private. They go in your record. They are not for anybody to know.
Yeah.
Ever. And if you do leak that information and you're found as someone leaking the information, you're held liable. Or you can be held liable. You can be held, you could be fired. You can, so it's not advantageous for someone to be a leaker in a situation that is supposed to be private in an HR matter like that, which this is. This is an HR matter. It's a business. Yes, there are more eyes on this business, but it is a business nonetheless. And so the people that are like calling for, well, this needs to be public and we need to know, and it's, no, first of all, there's more parties that you have that you could potentially, injure. Like you said, there's real employees and there's a family. There's so many other folks involved in the matter that it would be irresponsible for HR or the independent folks to put that out there, right? Regardless of who Horner is and Jerry Halliwell are, like, it doesn't matter. So. Yeah. That's just another perspective for some folks that, think that we the public are owed,
every answer
as to what happened. Yeah. It's going to be, and you know what? It's actually, this might be depressing to some. This might be an eye opener for others, but this happens in businesses every day, normal businesses. I don't see people out there saying, we need answers. And I guarantee you, if you've ever been in one of those calls, you don't want things going public because maybe it was a one-time mistake. Maybe it was, and this is not a comment on Horner at all. This is just in general. So why are we holding, you know, Red Bull to any different of a standard as we do the companies that we work at, you know, day in, day out?
Yeah.
Right? You would want things to remain private at your company. And so I think that's just another perspective that people need to at least understand, whether they want to agree with it or not. That's up to you. I'm not saying you need to change your mind on it, but you at least need to understand that there are processes that are involved in a matter like this. And all we can do is go by what we're hearing. You know, we're hearing that processes were followed and things happened. Now, you know, whatever happens now after this new supposed evidence came out, that's a whole other situation. But
yeah,
I do think people need to get a grip, understand that there's more to these situations than just, you know, you owe us. What's that whole, and there's this, the phenomenon, the parasocial phenomenon, where you become so close to like a content creator or a, you know, one of these people online that you feel like they're your actual friend or they owe you something or whatever it is. And, you know, parasocial relationships are very real, and people have a huge problem with understanding how that actually, you know, works. Like, you're not actually their friend, or you are not actually owed anything just because you follow this person on X, right? Or because you are, I don't know, like, because you are on TikTok and you follow the team and the admin responded to you, you suddenly, you know, think that you have a say on how they do their business. This is very much the scenario we're in. And so anyway, I think I can leave it there. I've said it. I don't want to keep repeating myself, but I think there is definitely a lot that people need to understand and learn about these types of scenarios and situations, and why they, and when they are being made public the way they are, you know, the way these are, there's even more scrutiny. There's even more reason for them to be, to hold things close to the vest and say, we need to figure this out fully before we go saying anything. You know, imagine the lawsuits that could be brought upon either party if someone does come out and say something one way or another, and then suddenly it gets brought out, it gets brought to light that it's the opposite, and oh, you didn't do anything about it. And so, I mean, those are real possibilities.
Well, just a couple responses to the things that you just said. The best practices for journalists are double verification. And I can say this because even when I was, several years ago, I was getting out of covering college football because I was moving back to Boston. I was going to finish my degree. And I knew that I wasn't going to have any time really to be a journalist anymore. Yeah. Let's call it what it is. I just had too much on my plate. I had to give something up. And unfortunately, that was my career in journalism. So I had a tip from a player that something was happening, that a coach who's actually a good friend of mine was getting fired. And I couldn't break the news because I just, one, it felt wrong because this guy is a good friend of mine. He's awesome. And I just didn't feel right breaking that kind of news. And two, I just kind of, again, because I was getting out of it, I said, hey, listen, if I can give this tip to somebody else who has a thriving career, then why not? So I gave it to one of my friends. And she said, holy crap, like, are you serious? And I told her where the location was going to be, what was going down, what time it was going to be at, told her everything she needed to know. And she's like, oh my God, are you serious? Okay, hold on. My newsroom's looking into that right now. We can't say anything, or we can't even show up until we have double verification. Well, they were able to get that double verification through an administrator at the school. And I believe that's what happened. And so she said, thank you so much for that tip. I owe you one. I really appreciate it. And, you know, they had to get that second confirmation, because if they had shown up, then everyone would have been talking about it. It would have spread like wildfire, and maybe nothing would have even happened. Maybe all the other news stations in the area would have gone and set up at the media pen, and nothing would have happened. And then My friend looks stupid. And then I look stupid, right? So you need that double, at least double confirmation. And it's not just double confirmation that something happened. It's double confirmation that everything, or at least the majority of everything contained in that packet, is accurate, that it actually happened. And that takes some time. So all these people saying, we demand to know this, we demand to know that, you guys owe this to us as journalists to tell us what's going on. Well, true, but they also owe it to themselves to protect their asses legally. Because if they mess up, then they have to
protect their ass.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, that's the kind of information that spreads like wildfire. And suddenly someone picks that up and says, well, the AP confirmed this, so this must be true. And what if it's not true at all? Then you have massive information, misinformation spreading like wildfire. And suddenly, you know, you see something and you agree with that. Your confirmation bias agrees with that. So that's that. That's fact. That's law now, regardless of whether it's proven inaccurate or not later on down the line. So this is all why this apparatus of verification is the most important thing a journalist can do, a serious journalist.
Yeah. And you made a comment. Well, I was just saying, you made a comment about like, oh, you know, their asses are online. And that's what a lot of folks, you know, unfortunately kind of turn to. They're like, oh, well, yeah, you know, they're just doing it for their FIA badge or whatever. Well, first of all, yeah, it's their job, right? And they've worked. It's not easy to get an FIA badge, accreditation. NASCAR has something called a hard card, which is like a season long pass. Those are very impossible to get. I don't know what F1's equivalent is, but I know that they have like. There's obviously the FIA badges for the season. There's season badges. There's individual race badges you could get. Those are very difficult to get. And oftentimes, if you lose them or you get it taken away, you probably have zero shot at ever getting one again. And if the least you can do is just double check or double verify before you put something out, that's not the hardest thing in the world to go and do, right? Like I'm going to go and I'm just going to double check here. Let me just make sure that what information I'm putting out is actually accurate. You know, there's no point in playing, let's be the first to get it out there game.
Yeah.
There just isn't, right? It's not worth it. And it's not worth it from a reputation standpoint. Forget about the, oh, you're just a corporate shill type thing, or you're just a shill for the FIA, whatever. It has nothing to do with that. It's reputation. If you, the same people that are looking to those journalists as, wow, you are a reputable source.
Yep.
Well, they want those people to actually be reputable. And so if you're just leaking shit out there and you're not being reputable, well, you're losing the people who like you and the people that don't like you. So it's a lose-lose for you.
I think the other, you know, so reputational, you talk about reputational damage. I think the players that have the biggest interest in reputational damage in this case, in case of Red Bull, that is Ford right now. They're the ones who have been pushing this. Like, we need to know answers. We need to know what's going on. This does, you know, the allegations at the very least are contradictory to our values, our morals. So we need to know what's going on. But again, you talk about that's an HR issue. So Red Bull is probably talking to Ford. They're probably trying probably trying to do everything they can to satisfy that reputational concern, because now Ford is part of that. So if anyone has any reason to know what's going on, it's Ford. It's their partners. It's their investors. And if they feel like they are being satisfied with the information that they're given, with the investigations that are going on, if Ford continues this partnership and Christian Horner stays at the helm, that means that Ford is satisfied with the outcome. And that's all we need to know, frankly. If Ford bows out and if Ford says, listen, we've seen all we need to see, we can't partner with Red Bull, then again, that tells us all we need to know. Because money follows. So watch the money. What were you going to say? Yep.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, Ford is, they're not going to be hasty. And situations like this, it does not benefit anyone to be hasty with a decision.
Yeah.
Which is why we're not seeing Ford just running away saying, oh my God, there's photos, there's screenshots, we're done, we're out. Because first of all, you know, that's stupid from a business perspective. Wait a minute, let's look into this stuff. Let's look into these other. So, you know, again, for those that are saying, well, it's a done deal, Ford's out, or, you know, they're not going to be involved in this. Yeah, that's the only accurate statement that you can make right now is they are not going to want to be associated with it if it is true. That's an if.
Right.
There's a big if always in all of this stuff. And again, I feel like we need to remind listeners or, you know, anybody in general, but there is no special, there's nothing special you are owed because this is a sport you watch on television or because you've been watching and following something for a long time or not a long time, right? You're not owed anything because somebody is a celebrity and their life is in the public. Now, it's a little bit different because their life is in the public, but you're not owed that. They're just like anybody else for the most part, aside from their life being a little more public than yours. But everything that happens is exactly the way anybody would want these proceedings or any of this situation to happen in their own personal lives. Right. Or with, you know, companies they work for, the companies they own, whatever it might be. So, yeah, I don't want to keep repeating it, but it is a very, you know, your point is very, very, very valid. There is so much here to unpack, and whether you want to blame the journalists for not being, you know, quick to release the information and whatever it might be, you know what? It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with us, the audience. It has everything to do with the process, getting it right, because that's more important than, you know, oh my God, the F1 fans, they want to know. So they need to, you know, we got to get this information out there. I guarantee you right now, nobody in Milton Keynes, nobody at the FIA is sitting there going, oh my God, what are the fans going to think? They are saying, oh my God, we've clearly got an issue, you know, a challenge on our hand. Whether or not it's accurate information, it's still a challenge, right? So even if this is all false, there's still a problem, right?
Yeah.
And they are saying, we need to figure this out and we need to fix this, whatever the answer may be. So you may not see something happen for a while, but that's by design. That's so that everything is processed properly. And, you know, I'm going to go on the record saying that out loud. Like, yes.
Yeah.
The minute you start to believe in, you know, the conspiracies and all that other stuff, then you're kind of, I don't say all hope is lost for you, but it's hard to see past things once you believe, you know, it's like people that think the NFL is fixed, right? Yeah. Do I hate the fact that it's the same team winning all the time and my team's not winning? Yeah, of course I do. Of course I hate it. But the minute I start to believe that things are fixed for betting, oh, well, the sports books are, they're fixing the games, and I understand there has been match fixing in like European soccer, and I understand things happen, but to think that systemically, or, you know, every game is fixed to hit a score line, then why am I watching? It's WWE at that point, right? So I have to have this is again me personally talking, I have to believe in a modicum of Red Bull wants to have, they're trying to just go through the processes, the right channels before taking action. And things are being done correctly, you know, to protect the parties that are involved, all parties involved. Remember, like you said, when you started, it's not just Christian Horner. It's his wife. It's his kids. It's the person who potentially made the accusation, right? Like there's other employees. So there's a lot more than just what we all, and I say we all, but then the, you know, fans want to believe. So,
well, there's two other points I kind of want to touch upon with that is this independent investigation determined no wrongdoing, right? It didn't determine that Horner didn't do anything wrong. Okay. This, again, you talk about from an HR perspective, it determined he didn't do anything to violate his contract of employment or the really any other thing that HR was inquiring about. That is what this independent investigation determined. Is cheating on your spouse wrong? Yes. Okay. We can agree with that. Did he actually do that? We don't know. We haven't seen the information yet. So we shouldn't be jumping to conclusions there. And also what's wrong is subjective, right? So something else to consider. And this data dump, listen, if every single piece of evidence that was shown in that hearing or gathered in that hearing is what is contained in this Google Drive, then we're going to get to see at some point, maybe, how this independent investigations team came to the conclusion that he didn't do anything wrong to violate employment or HR or anything like that. So there will be greater transparency there. Just wait for the documents to be confirmed and maybe we can make our judgment call there after. Right. But the second thing is, like you said earlier, Formula One is a business. It is a very, very highly profitable, highly visible business. And people are wondering, well, what's the FIA's meeting going to look like? What's the team meeting going to look like with team bosses? Teams are about protecting themselves because they have a bottom line to look after also. Red Bull is extremely profitable. Red Bull is extremely marketable. They elevate the value of the sport significantly. And who benefits from that? All the teams involved. The FIA benefits. Everyone benefits when everyone's making more money. Now, if you sit there and say, well, we need to go on this moral high ground and we can't have this in the sport and this and that, you're going to lose money. You have a lot of people who are there. They would never watch Formula One ever again if Horner was fired. Let's call it what it is. And
well, if he was fired without process, I would say without.
Right. Without being something major.
Because if he did something wrong, then. Yeah, exactly.
Listen, if he cheated on his wife in a way that was violent, something that was absolutely like, wow, this is inexcusable. If he cheats on his wife and his wife stays with him, okay, that's between them at that point. That's between them. There are two ways to look at that, right? So teams are going to come to the defense of the money. Let's call it what it is. There's a reason why they don't want Andretti involved in the sport because they say that, you know, it's pretty obvious when you read the tea leaves the last couple of years why they don't want expansion is because they don't want to share the profit pool. That's why they keep moving the markers on the dilution fee, right? The anti-dilution fee. So all of that to say, this is a business and they're going to do what they need to do to protect that business, okay? And if it's something that can be settled between a family and HR deems it to not be that big of a deal, not at least not a fireable offense, okay, then let's just call it what it is. Let's move on from this because there's absolutely no reason to keep beating this horse dead. It's already dead. And if you are one of those people who are coming at Horner and coming at Red Bull and coming out from every angle saying, you know, that he should be gone, he should be fired. Okay, well, then you're one of those people that if he maintains his position, they're not concerned about losing you as a fan. And that's the blunt way to say it. But that's just, that's what it is. So don't watch the sport if you don't agree with the outcome of an investigation. And again, that's a extremely blunt way to say it, but this is a business. And at the end of the day, these teams are trying to watch their bottom line and losing someone like Horner, losing Red Bull fans, that's going to come with a price that I don't know that these teams are going to be willing to risk. So
yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean,
it sucks, but it is what it is. Let's be adults here.
You want to shift gears a little bit to the actual race today?
On track action.
I don't know how much action there actually was, but We had our first race of the season. We got to watch, you know, real cars going around track, and we got to watch what the difference was from quali and practice and all that good stuff. We got to see, you know, if teams were really able to, was it as close as we thought it might be? You know, there was definitely a lot of thought that, hey, there's opportunity here for maybe a tight pack. And, you know, there was a lot of people saying, wow, look at this, you know, from first to last, it's closer than any, you know, than any race was and whatnot. And so we heard a lot of that too, right? Like, oh my God, qualifying was incredible. And hey, listen, it was good. It was good quality. I think there was a lot of potential. But as anybody who's watched motorsport ever can attest to, qualifying and all that stuff is really not even, it's less than half the battle in many circumstances, right? Maybe if it's Monaco or something, it might be 75% of the battle. But on a track where you can pass, you can do all that stuff, you know, it means nothing. So
yeah,
Max dominated. I mean, literally, he got the Grand Slam, led every lap, won the race, fastest lap. What's the other one? I don't know. Whatever the Grand Slam is, I know I'm missing something.
It's fastest lap.
Fastest lap,
pole, and
pole, yep, and the win. And so it you know, 22 seconds over his teammate in the same car is really, really disappointing. Now, obviously, there is we saw a lot. We saw this last year. You know, we saw a lot of this last year. And I don't know what some of us were thinking, like myself. You know, did I really think that we might have gotten a closer field? Did I did. I kind of did think, like, man, this is going to be the hope. You know, it's the hope what kills you, they say, if you're a sports fan. Definitely had a lot of hope in Ferrari today. Thought there would be some more fight.
There was fight, all right. I saw it.
Yeah, between the two Ferraris.
But I liked it, though. Because here's my thing. I think that there's a lot of people saying the obvious, that Ferrari picked the wrong driver, right? Mm. That they should have gone with Sainz over Charles, that Carlos Sainz is a much... He's better. And that's the argument there. And so I'm saying that with him out of a seat right now, I mean, obviously that's half the grid is going to be out of a seat too, depending on where they end up going. But he's trying to look better than his teammate. And hey, as far as I'm concerned, if they're going to let them race, then you're going to see a very, very different Carlos Sainz this year. So I think that the racing between him and oh my God.
Leclerc.
Him and Leclerc. I think the racing that you're gonna see between them this season is going to be absolutely batshit insane. And I'm excited for that, because if we can guarantee that Max Verstappen is at the very least going to be on podium every race, then let's just look ahead to the down battles. And that is one that I'm really excited to see this season, because he's trying to get the most money he can. He's trying to get the best contract that he can at the best, you know, seat that he can. And I still hope that's Red Bull. That's just me. But what are your...
I'm a Ferrari fan through and through, and so I am team whoever's in those seats, that's who I want to win. It'll definitely be one of the more fun battles this season. I think the McLarens are gonna, the McLarens should hopefully continue to progress and develop, and you know, that'll make things better. But the Ferraris are going to be interesting, and I think Fred's got a real, is going to have a real challenge on his hand. Like how to keep this, and if anyone that watched Drive to Survive saw, there was the point where last season where Fred has to kind of talk to both of them and say, listen, guys, we gotta be good here, we gotta play nice type thing, and so I think there's going to be a lot of that this season. I think he's really going to have to manage it. Because like you said, I mean, Carlos is fighting for his racing career. This is his racing career. He's only 29 years old, but he's fighting for his, F1 is very competitive. Very competitive in terms of who gets seats. There's only 20 of them. There's only 20 seats in the world. And we've seen time and time again, just because you might be a really good driver doesn't mean you necessarily get a seat either, right? This is a game of politics and money, sponsorship, and the guys that can bring that in can get prioritized. But if you're not winning, or you're not showing that you've got potential, it's harder to get that sponsor. So Carlos has to do everything he can to prove that he's worth a seat outright, or he is worthy of some political capital, so to speak, that can get him into a seat.
It's giving right now Daniel Ricciardo, when he left Red Bull for Renault and then McLaren and then didn't have a seat and then became a Red Bull reserve and then now to AlphaTauri. I mean, the fact that he went from being one of the most highly sought after drivers at Red Bull to winning races, winning hard races too, to just a couple years later, he didn't even have a seat. Nobody wanted him. That is pretty eye-opening for any driver. So this is the season that for Carlos Sainz, that I think he can look at that and say, I'm at Ferrari. If I make the wrong move, I'm going to make a massive lateral move. I could potentially be without a seat. And when you look at all of the F2, F3 drivers that are trying to come up in the ranks right now, you need to defend your spot in Formula One to the best of your ability. And you cannot make those lateral moves, period. Otherwise, you run the risk of tanking your career. And even now, we're at the point where we saw the battle between Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo today. They asked Yuki to give up his spot to Daniel Ricciardo. And in the time that it took them to squabble, they lost time. Right. So when you have those types of battles going on with your teammate, and at the end of the day, your job is to beat your teammate first and foremost. You want to beat your teammate because you are trying to prove to your team that you are the better driver and that they should keep you. They should pay you extremely well for your efforts. And when you're being asked to give up that position to your teammate, that's got to be pretty demoralizing on top of it when they think that they're on a better strategy than you because they put them there. So, it's tough when you see these battles between teammates, but you also kind of have to read the tea leaves. You also have to say to yourself, are they doing whatever they can do to protect Daniel Ricciardo from potentially falling out again? Are they trying to make him look better for whatever reason? Because we all understand the politics of the sport.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much, right? There's so much
of that. And he's extremely marketable.
And again, there's this idea that marketing is, or not an idea, I guess there's a lack of understanding of how important marketing is to, I mean, listen, it's a sport that has to do with money, a lot of money. Well, how do you get money from these big companies? You have to be marketable. There is absolutely a lack of understanding from many that are, it tends to be the purists. You know, I'm not going to pile on to the DTS fans all the time. There's mm-hmm. the purists who also don't understand that aspect of the sport, or maybe they understand it, but they choose to ignore that aspect of the sport, or they think, well, that shouldn't be. Okay, but it is. You know, yeah. You want to see your favorite driver racing. They need money to create a car, or you want your team to be better and go and change your fucking car. Well, you can't change your fucking car if you don't have money, right?
Yeah.
So there is a lot of things that need to just be understood. I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from all of this. And I'm reading, and as we're talking, like I'm scrolling through my friggin' replies about the posts I made, and people are just, you know, wow, F1 shouldn't be marketing to casuals. Okay, well, then you clearly don't understand how it works. Like,
yeah,
they've chosen. This is the other thing too. Whether or not we agree with the whole casuals conversation, Formula One has chosen. They have put into play this marketing blitz, whether it's the Americas, whether it's the new younger fan. They are approaching this as, we want to grow the sport. Now, whether or not Liberty Media is going to keep the sport or they're going to sell the asset doesn't really matter. From a purely business perspective, they're approaching this like, we are going to attract this younger audience. We are going to hype up this younger audience. We're going to get them excited about the sport, about the series. We're going to have fun, attractive races for this audience. And they're spending millions, if not billions of dollars to make all of that happen. For all the folks that are like, well, just stop caring about the DTS casuals. You really think that a company that spent so much money is just going to stop doing something just because you, the purist, doesn't like it? They're looking at their bottom line, number one. That's what Liberty Media cares about. The financials that had just come out, let's see, I'll pull them up because it was actually quite interesting. That many probably will, I don't know, be happy about, but revenue increased for F1 25% year over year to $3.2 billion. They've got over $1 billion in media rights. They're making nearly $1 billion in race promotion. And they're making over $500 million in sponsorship. Total attendance, meaning in attendance at a racetrack, increased 5%. But what fell? Global TV viewership fell 2.5%, which is the second year in a row that it fell. Okay, so you're losing some people. And if you are a business person, or even if you're not a business person, if you just, I don't know, if you could say to yourself at the beginning of your investment, I might lose a couple fake fans, right? But I'm going to gain, or I'm going to increase my revenues year over year by 25%. Are you going to take that deal?
No.
Yes. You won't take that deal? You would rather lose money to gain a couple fans? And by a couple, I'm saying global TV viewership fell 2.5%. There's still 1.5 billion people globally that are watching F1. But no. F1 revenue for Liberty Media was up 25%.
Yeah.
25%. also they gain people actually going to races. So people are converting from, you know what, I don't want to watch it on TV. I'm going to actually go in person. So a 5% increase in attendance yielded a 2.5% decrease in global viewer, in TV viewership. I would argue that anybody would take that. If, again, Liberty Media is an investment. They are a holding company. All they want is their assets, all of the assets that they have. They've got other things that they own. All they care about is that number at the bottom going up every year. The minute that number starts to fall, then things will change. But until that happens, anything that they're doing is not for the benefit of any singular ideology. The purists want the V10. I want the V10. I want the smaller cars. No, we're not going back to that because it's not about that. That's what they're saying, right? In their head. Nope.
Yeah.
Everything we're doing is making us money. Why would we change that? Why are we going to change that structure? To appease the petrol heads? Well, the petrol heads didn't grow this sport. The petrol heads didn't grow this sport for the past, decade before we bought it. It was falling because Bernie was just trying to attract the 70-year-old petrol head, right? So this is what the conversation behind closed doors actually is, that people just don't want to admit, I guess the word is, right?
Yeah.
You've got these purists. They're like, well, bring back the V10s and let's stop doing street races. Great. But you know what? You know what's cool about street races? They're less expensive to put on than building a track or going. I mean, obviously, if you go to a track, it's less expensive. But the street races don't necessarily cost them as much to put on, and they can market it better. How cool is it to say we're racing on the Vegas Strip versus the Vegas Speedway? And now I know the Speedway is not made for F1, but let's just say it was. Let's say it was a road track.
Yeah.
You tell me, what is more marketable for an audience, the audience they're trying to attract, mind you. So there's, you know, there's like so many things that we're seeing, and obviously, you know, going back to what we initially started talking about with this, which was Max's domination, you know, the domination, Red Bull nailed it. Red Bull nailed the regulations. There's nothing we can take away from them. It's depressing, I think, for the rest of us that want to see tight racing across the board when, I mean, today there was not a lot of great action. I'll tell you that. Like, there was some things that were enjoyable. Like you said, there's the Ferrari battle, if you're a non-Ferrari fan. For us Ferrari fans, like, I don't like seeing them diving into corners against each other and potentially, smashing up. But other than that, it wasn't really like, I'm not sitting there going, wow, these were great battles across the board. I don't know, unless I'm just jaded by the fact that, you know, Ferrari didn't do anything. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't pleased with it. So, F1's at a crossroads, like we talked about at the beginning. They're at a crossroads. Money's going up. They're making their money. They're doing all that. That's great. The average age of the sport of the viewer is down. Awesome. But how do you keep all this up?
Something totally random that I was thinking about when you were like talking about like Las Vegas Motor Speedway versus like riding on track on the strip and talking about the fun that is. I'm like, wait, I've seen Tiesto at both the Las Vegas Motor Speedway and at the F1 Las Vegas paddock. And I've got to say, Speedway was a lot more fun, although that was a full-blown three-day rave. But I'm just saying, they could bring that experience to Formula One. They could turn it into a rave if they wanted to. And I think that would attract significantly more people. Just imagine if you had different like activations around the strip during any F1 event, whether it's quali, whether it's practice, especially practice, you have little mini raves going on around the strip. Like, how fun would that be?
Yeah.
There's so much with that street race that you can do that would absolutely blow the doors off of its attractiveness. So, yeah, to your point, it brings Formula One closer to people. Whether, you know, petrol heads, purists like it or not, it brings the sport closer because there are people who love Formula One who could never make it to a race if it wasn't a street race. It's more easily accessible to them where they live. It's something to see. And a lot of people who might not even watch Formula One, they might just be vacationing or going someplace for something. And suddenly, they're just going to stumble across some cars. Oh, what's this? And suddenly you've opened the sport up to new potential fans. So yeah, I do think that Formula One is in the interest of making money. We all know that, which I think also kind of hints at maybe this next topic of, is the cap actually working? Yeah. Is the cap working? Because I said this years ago before the implementation of the cap, that it sucked, that it wasn't going to serve the purpose that people thought it was going to serve. And people laughed at me and they said, yeah, right. Formula One needs to, you know, be more equal. I'm like, it's never going to be equal, but enjoy that thought of yours. It's beautiful, but it's never going to happen. It's being proven that it's never going to happen. There's never going to be equality in Formula One. Some teams are just more blessed. And here's the thing. I think that if you're going to have a cap, that's fine. That's one thing. But if you're going to have a cap that doesn't include driver salaries, that doesn't include the salaries of the top, two, three people, personnel on your team, what's the point of the cap? Oh, you can make fewer parts. You have less time to develop something because you have less money. Okay. But you can still afford the best engineer. You can still afford the most eccentric team principal that's going to help you get your team from point A to point B in the fastest time possible. You can still afford the best drivers, in which I think if you put Max Verstappen in a Haas or a Williams, you're still going to get the best drive out of those cars you've ever had because you have a driver who's absolutely fearless.
Yeah.
So you might not win the race, but you're going to have a hell of a lot better result with him in your car than you would if you had someone else. So no, unless they get serious about putting and actually do it and include driver salaries and those top personnel salaries in the cap, then the cap means nothing. It really doesn't matter. What are we racing for? Making people feel better about the fact that, well, you can spend the same amount of money as the top dogs, but you still can't produce the results. Like it's wasting people's time. And at the very least, if we had a better or more bunched up midfield or lower end, fine. Okay. I guess but that's not happening. And we're a couple years in this experiment and it's not happening. So what's the point?
Yeah. I would like to believe that the cap is it's a good idea in theory. But yeah. I don't know how much longer you can call yourself the pinnacle of this, you know, motorsport if you're not really allowing teams to truly
be the pinnacle.
Do what they, you know, like, and be, you know, be the pinnacle, like, just be that. Obviously, there's just too much. There's too much. Policing, maybe that's not the right word, but you know, you've got too much. With the cap, I guess it's technically policing, but you know, with the cap, you've got. I guess the very soul of the sport is just not there, anymore. Right? You genuinely don't have what made the sport the sport. Which is, yes, is unlimited spending, does it help the teams at the bottom? Not necessarily, but it also, I think you have, at one point we were able to, there was more teams on the grid, right? There was maybe it opens the doors for more teams to try to create and spend. You know, what if you did get an entry where it was like, we're just going to do whatever we can to spend and create something? You know, maybe you do get a someone to come in and that can actually win, you know, win some races, or, you know, create a little bit of a battle. You don't have that now. Cause it's like, well, it's, you know, you've got these locked in teams. They're locked in. These 10 are locked in. You know, you know that nobody's going to, you know, you can't add another one. Because they're not allowing Andretti. So like they're clearly not, they're not allowing that to happen. And any teams that may have a shot, like look at McLaren. McLaren really came on at the end of last year.
Yeah.
But can you sustain that with a cap? Does a cap really allow you to sustain that, that development? I don't know. You know, Red Bull was developing the car. I was just telling someone this, like Red Bull was developing the car midway through last year, probably, if not earlier, right? Well, a cap is not really allowing anyone, at least in my head, right? A cap is not really allowing other teams to be able to play catch up when they've got to develop, right? And while we've got to develop our car this year to be maybe somewhat competitive, we're not all Red Bull that we're way ahead. So, you know, we've got to keep spending. And if we've got to keep spending, that means that next year we're kind of already behind the eight ball. But if we could just spend next year as much as we wanted to kind of catch up over the offseason, then we might be closer at the beginning of the season. Yeah. And I think that's where the cap ends up, you know, hamstringing teams. Now, I am no way implying that if unlimited cap would help teams at the bottom, like a Haas, like Williams, Sauber, right? Like, it's not going to help those teams. So yes, there might be more disparity amongst the top teams in those, but you might at least add some more teams to the title fight or to the top fight, right? You're going to have your Red Bull, you're going to have your Mercedes, you're going to have your Ferrari, you're going to have your McLaren, but now you might actually put Aston fully into that fight. You might put maybe an although Alpine is just a disaster right now, but maybe you put an Alpine up in there. Maybe you get a team like Audi that comes in and can actually win races. Like what is actually pretty funny is that, you know, people are talking about Audi coming in 26, and you know they're already saying like, oh well, they're not going to have a shot till minimum 2030. Man, that's a really, like, now granted, I understand this goes with any expansion team or new team to a sport, but like, it's possible. If you look at the NHL, the Las Vegas Golden Knights, like their first year or second year, I think they were already in the Stanley Cup in the championship. And the Jaguars didn't take very long to be good in the NFL. You know, they got to the playoffs pretty early after. Yeah, there was a little bit of down years, but they ended up getting pretty solid. So it's possible. Right, it's possible, but the fact that people are like, "There's no way Audi's going to come anywhere close for at least 5 years." Like, holy cow! Imagine the money they're going to spend in 5 years, but they can only spend so much on development of a car.
Yeah,
and that's it. So, like, well, if you didn't have a cap, maybe they're like, you know what? We're going to pump a ton of money to get this thing as a competitor right away because we know we can. Okay, so that might add another team. Andretti would be another team, right? So now you've got like six or seven teams that might actually be decent competitors that they could, you know, take the cap off and just go for it. So I agree with you. I think the cap is an issue, and I think it is. Well, first of all, the cap is absolutely against everything the sport stands for, which is, you know, technological advancement and, you know, being the pinnacle of this, you know, all motorsport. It's almost comical to hear that now when they say it. Well, this is, you know, I think Crofty said, he's like, this is the pinnacle of motorsport. And it's just like, dude, do you actually believe that, what you're saying? Like, do you actually believe that right now?
But he's getting paid a lot of money.
I know that. I get that. I know. And that's, I kind of say it tongue in cheek. Like,
yeah.
But you sit there and you're like, man, do you actually believe this? Like, the more you say it, you.
I don't think he can believe that. I don't think he can believe that. I don't think anyone who actually has been a Formula One fan longer than, I'd say, 2018 could actually say that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I would like to see it go. Shout out to Jacob or J underscore Cubs on Twitter X for that. He said, cost cap is useless and it hurts the sport. Bottom teams are still bottom teams. Top teams can't catch up. I mean, I think that pretty much summarizes what we just talked about. It's the truth.
Well, yeah, 100%. You know, and that actually makes it really simple and easy, right? Like, the bottom teams are always going to be the bottom teams regardless, and they are not going to have a shot, and they're going to be sitting there trying to play catch up no matter what.
Yep.
And your top team, they're going to be the top. So the fact that you don't really allow the full potential of the sport, you know, to show itself.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know, you're creating. It's just, it's so funny to watch this conversation play out. There's so many different perspectives. You know, there's so many different people that are like, you know, there's been dominating periods, you know, and I'll say it. I'll be the first to say it. We've seen dominating periods before. This isn't the first time.
Yeah.
It just feels different. I'll say that. Right. And, I've gotten a ton of texts, friend, you know, had conversations with friends, you know, my brother, I got my brother into, you know, F1, and he started watching it because he was just like, oh, well, let me start watching this. You know, let's see what it's all about. And every week will text me and just be like, dude, how is this guy so far ahead? And, you know, I'll try to explain some things about aerodynamics and, you know, they've got this guy who's really good at building cars and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, but how can all these other teams who spend this, like, they're supposed to also have, you know, very intelligent people. How can they not, like, figure it out? And it just becomes kind of like this. And I guess the point I want to make for this entire episode, and I guess maybe my final thought on all of this that we talked about today, is where F1 is doing a disservice, where I think right now F1 is doing a disservice to new fans and what they can do for new fans to really help and kind of help bridge that gap between the new and the old fans is education. Help them understand what they are watching. If fans understood that what they're watching is not going to be, you know, tight racing all the time, maybe why that is, and they truly understood all of that, and here's other things you can look for, here's other things you can be excited about. I mean, people don't know that, you know, and especially like American fans. We don't have ties in our sports, right? We don't have ties in U.S. sports. So now I've always watched European soccer, Serie A, for my whole life. So I understand what ties, you know, how ties work. And I understand how no playoffs works and whatnot. But most American fans don't understand all that.
Yeah.
So you don't understand. I don't understand what a tie is. I don't understand what do you mean? How does this end? How can this end on a caution line or on a yellow flag? How can there be no playoffs? You know, what do you mean? How do you, like, isn't there an end of the year, like, fight to the title type thing? No, none of that exists in, you know, in U.S. sports. So it's challenging. Like, there's a lot of people that are, you know, that think that, oh, doing a playoff format, that'll help. All right. No, it's not. No, it's truly not going to help. It helps in NASCAR maybe a little bit because the fan base, the U.S.-centric fan base, is used to that and enjoys that. Now, I'm not saying that the playoffs system works in in NASCAR, because I know there's a lot of purists that also complain about it, but there's a lot of people that like it too, and it does create a lot of opportunities for excitement and whatnot. But like, that's never going to happen in F1. That yeah. would never happen. Could you imagine if we did a playoff format, the uproar? Like, oh my God, it'd be even worse. It'd be yeah. it would be even worse than the American expansion, to be quite honest with you. And so I don't know. I think that when you have stuff, when you have all of these things coming to a head, it's like someone needs to figure it out, give answers. Like, we don't have that right now. We don't have clarity, and that's okay. Like, I'm not saying F1, I'm not saying I deserve the clarity. They need to tell me what they're trying to do. Like, no, they don't owe that to me. I can figure yeah. it out based on the actions they're taking. And like you said, if you follow the money in any of this stuff, you can kind of figure it out, you know, what is how it all works.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's I think that's my final thought on everything.
Well, I asked Twitter X, what do y'all think about the first race? We'll read your responses on the podcast today. So I already said what J_Cub said. Mike Woodward said, watching Sainz finish above Leclerc is going to be fun. I don't think you would agree. You don't want to watch Ferrari having to fight each other every race. You want them to be fighting.
I do not. You're right.
Yeah.
I do not want to see them fighting, but I will say this. I am prancing horse above driver. So I don't care who wins me the championship. I want Ferrari to win the championship. I want Ferrari to win races. I want them to be on the podium. I don't care which one of them does it. And quite frankly, I'm also of the mindset, and I'm going to finally put this out there because I've felt this way for a while. I just never said it out loud. If Ferrari let Leclerc walk and kept Sainz to pair with Hamilton, it would have been fine with me. I would have been just as okay with it. I'm not a Leclerc apologist. I don't, you know, he's a great driver, don't get me wrong, but you know what? At the same time, we're not winning. We're not winning anything. Now, granted, that I also believe that's the car, right? I know that's the car. There's a lot to do with development of the car that's lacking and is not helping him. So that's why I would never like blame him. But I'm also like, okay, you know what? Unless you start winning, you know, Schumacher came to Ferrari and they weren't good either. He helped develop that car. He helped them develop that into a winner. So okay, you know what, Leclerc, like. And I think that's what I'm most excited about with Hamilton. So I'll make that comment to whoever that was. Sorry, I didn't remember the name, but that's
Mike
my response
Woodward.
There.
Yeah, and then H446467-6243 said, "So boring. It's going to be a struggle to watch the next 23 races. And if they're all going to pan out like this, Perez needs to be fighting Max to make the season even remotely interesting." And then Keith Previte said, boring snooze fest as usual. So, far, not so good, minus Sainz finishing on podium above Leclerc. That is what the X people are saying today. And you know what? We don't disagree with y'all.
Nope.
But I like this.
We do not.
I think if you're watching, if you're listening to this show right now, we're going to ask the same question every race week, perhaps the same question every week about F1. You guys tell us what you guys think. We'll read them on our show and we'll converse about them. And
keep it coming, guys. I can't wait. I cannot wait to hear what everyone thinks all season long. I mean, we're going to Jeddah and another Saturday race for everyone. You know, don't forget, we've got another race. Because of Ramadan, we've got another Saturday race instead of Sunday. So it'll be it won't feel like the real F1 season has started, I think, you know, yet until we get back to, you know, Sunday races, a traditional weekend schedule, and maybe these first two races maybe they won't be indicative of the whole season, right? I I don't see Red Bull losing in Jeddah, not on that track.
Last question for you. Do you think that the new DRS enabled on the second lap rule is going to benefit Red Bull more than anyone else? Building that gap on the first lap.
Yeah, so building the lap is going to be, you know, obviously, and he did it right now on the first lap. He was just out of DRS reach of Leclerc.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it – here's what I think it does or it attempts to do. It attempts to keep everyone, not Max Verstappen and Red Bull, tighter, right? Mm. It tries to keep
– Yeah.
I would be curious to see if it's going to cause more DRS trains because a lot of those other teams can't really break apart. You know, they're not breaking away from each other the way Max is able to break away. So if you can't break away from, you know, the person behind you, then you end up in a DRS train, right? Almost like the entire race. The way the rule was before, you had a few laps before it was activated. And that allowed you to potentially build up. I think this is an attempt to make some racing closer. I don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah.
I definitely don't know if it helps Red Bull, but it's not going to hurt them because if Max can jump out to over a second, which he's clearly able to do, I don't know if it matters for Red Bull.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
What do you think? Why would you think about it?
I don't know. I was wondering what who would have the advantage there. And I don't think you're wrong by trying to give that advantage to everyone else to try and help them out. Because I do think that you should still be close enough after the first lap to be able to have that DRS enabled to help you. But
ideally, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see how this impacts strategies down the line, if any. A lot of people were saying, the only reason why I asked was some people on X were saying that they see this benefiting the Red Bulls because not only do they have the faster, more powerful car, that it's going to put them out of DRS range if somebody is in like second or third position. So they're able to build that. And as we saw with Max, he had such a massive lead that he was able to build that lead and continue building that lead before he even went in for his pit stop. And when he came out of that pit stop, he still had such a substantial lead that, I mean, you were never going to get DRS on him throughout the entire race. So,
yeah, I don't think there was any, DRS shot against Max, right?
No. And in other races, people have been in DRS range throughout a race with Max. So I'm curious how this impacts their strategy.
Yeah. Listen, he gets a second in front of you. It's so you don't get that opportunity. Then, so this is, this might actually hurt the more I'm thinking about it. Hmm. So let's just take the top three, right? Or top four. Max gets out of range. You now have 2, 3, and 4 still within range of each other, but they basically create like a little mini DRS train and they're fighting one another. Well, now them fighting one another lets Max just keep going, right? Because now you've got third is attacking second, so second has to defend. And then fourth is attacking third has to defend and try to attack at the same time, right? So you're almost giving Max, so back to your original point, I'm coming around to this now, probably does give Max or whoever the leader is an advantage by starting it so early because no one else can break away. And if he's the only one that can break far enough away and not get caught in that game, everyone else kind of screws themselves. Yeah. Yep. So I'm changing my mind on that one.
Yep. So death, taxes, Max Verstappen winning the Dutch national anthem. That is 2024.
That should be the title of the that should be the title of the show. Death, taxes, and Max Verstappen.
Death, taxes, and the Dutch national anthem. Oh, well, you know what?
I'm with you on that.
We've got a lot of racing between now and November.
We do.
We saw what we saw today, and I think that's a good good gauge for perhaps how the season's going to turn out. But yeah, we'll, as always, be here talking about the news topics, all the interesting stuff. But again, if you're looking for confirmation bias, bullshit, drama, this probably isn't the podcast for you. But no. If you like what we talk about, which is kind of more pragmatic conversation, follow us, subscribe.
Yeah.
We're here for you.
We'll
guys.
Still talk. We'll talk about results, you know, here and there on track, but it's not always going to be what you think you're going to hear. I appreciate you all listening. You can follow me over on X/Twitter, at Vincenzo Blandino. You can follow Vanessa at TheVFCastro over on Twitter. Engage with us if you want to be part of our show. You can do that by tweeting questions at us, or you can respond to one of our questions, and you might get on the show. We definitely reference a lot of what you are saying as a good barometer for what we're saying resonates, or if it's resonating with the audience. So. You can kind of be part of the show that way. With that being said, I have been Vincenzo Landino. She's Vanessa Castro. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at TheVFCastro and Vincenzo Landino.